You listen to KPFT, you enjoy some of our fine programming, and you have done your part to keep us commercial-free by calling in a pledge of support. Hats off to you for taking that first step. But before you settle into that fantastic feeling, don't forget, you still need to send in that pledge of support to finalize your promise to KPFT. But be warned, that fantastic feeling will soon follow. Thanks for supporting KPFT Houston.
KPFT elections are underway. Candidates speak their piece every half hour.
KPFT, this is Wendy. I used to say that 100 times a day when I was answering your calls as the KPFT receptionist, but I'm now off to a new chapter in serving the station. I, Wendy Schrell, am running for a seat on the new board. I know how KPFT really works. I've also traveled to national board meetings around the country and worked hard to get bylaws passed. I can work together with you now to make the station even better. Time for us to just send money to Pacifica is over. I will work hard to get more people involved in the station at every level, and I'm starting now by just asking everyone to please vote in this election. I would love it if you would vote for me, Wendy Schrell, and also take a look at the other candidates endorsed by People for Progressive Radio at www.pfpr.org.
To find out more about KPFT elections, visit the KPFT website at kpft.org.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT in Houston. And now, Houston's only primetime radio program dedicated to news and concerns of the lesbi, gay, and transgender identity. This is Queer Voices.
Good evening. It's a nice 59 degrees here in Houston, and this, of course, is Queer Voices. Tonight on our show, it's only going to be an hour long because the second hour, they're going to be doing a special election coverage of the people running for the board here at local advisory board here on KPFT. But in the first hour, JD is going to be talking to Greg Shapiro, who writes for Outsmart, is very much involved in the music world, in the queer music world. And also Ernie Manews, who is going to be doing a new show here on Channel 8 called Interviews. And his first guest is going to be Anne Rice this Thursday. You are, of course, listening to KPFT and now to the BBC in London.
BBC News with John Jason. The United States Treasury Department has ordered an investigation into whether a critic of President Bush, the former Treasury Secretary Paul O'Neill, improperly disclosed one or more secret documents to a television program. Mr. O'Neill, who's contributed to a new book on the Bush administration, has alleged that Mr. Bush intended to oust Saddam Hussein even before September 2001. From Washington, Justin Webb reports.
President Bush stands accused by his former Treasury Secretary Paul O'Neill of looking for an excuse from the very moment he arrived in the White House to attack Saddam Hussein. In interviews to publicize a book, Mr. O'Neill has added that he, as a member of the president's national security team, never saw any evidence that weapons of mass destruction existed in Iraq. In response, the president said that as with previous U.S. administrations, he had been for regime change, but he suggested that the task had only become urgent after the terrorist attacks on America in 2001. Within the administration, there's widespread annoyance at Mr. O'Neill's comments and his decision to show documents he says were secret in a television program publicizing his book has led to a Treasury Department investigation to see whether its former boss has broken any laws.
A summit of more than 30 leaders from across the Americas, including President Bush, has opened in the Mexican city of Monterrey amid sharp differences of opinion between the Bush administration and some of the region's left-wing leaders. Even before the meeting began, delegations struggled to agree on the agenda and a draft final document. From Monterrey, Stephen Gibbs reports.
President Bush began his visit with a private meeting with Mexican President Vicente Fox. By all accounts, it went well. Afterwards, Mr. Fox gave his warm approval to Mr. Bush's proposal to offer illegal immigrants in the U.S., most of whom are Mexican, the right to work legally. Both men stated their belief that free trade can help improve the lot of the 200 million Latin Americans that currently live in poverty. But not all the heads of state at the summit agree. A group led by Brazil's President Lula is resisting U.S. efforts to include a commitment on free trade negotiations in the summit's final declaration. They're also objecting to an American proposal to ban corrupt governments from future meetings.
A week after securing victory in elections in Georgia, the president-elect, Mikhail Saakashvili, has been outlining more of his reform plans, including how he intends to tackle corruption. Mr. Saakashvili said he had sacked the country's prosecutor general, Nuzgara Gabrichidze, and would replace him with someone who was willing to fight criminal clans. You're listening to the news from the BBC in London. President Bush has announced that the US and India to increase cooperation in a number of areas, including nuclear energy and safety, missile defense, and the trade in high technology products. In a written statement, Mr. Bush said the two countries will also tighten restrictions on the spread of weapons of mass destruction and seek ways of cooperating in space technology. John Lyon reports from Washington.
Mr. Bush said this was an important milestone in transforming the relationship between the United States and India. A senior U.S. State Department official later denied that this was a reward to India for agreeing to open negotiations over Kashmir. Nevertheless, many in the region will suspect that is what lies behind this announcement. Washington is keen to stress that India will not get any help with its nuclear weapons or its missile programs. In fact, this program of high-tech cooperation depends on India taking steps to prevent the spread of weapons of mass destruction. The announcement follows a sustained effort by the Bush administration to improve relations with India, without sacrificing the administration's ties with the Pakistani government.
The World Health Organization is investigating the possibility that an outbreak of bird flu in several countries in Southeast Asia could spread to humans. The flu strain was found in at least three people who died in Vietnam. A WHO official in Hanoi said that at least 10 people who had died in the capital since October had had contacts with birds, but he said the virus in humans did not appear to be spreading widely. Six people have appeared before anti-terrorism judges in France, accused of providing assistance to a group plotting to carry out a chemical attack. The six, who include two Muslims, imams, Chilali Ben Chilali and Murad Merabet, are from the Lyon area and were arrested last week. They were placed under formal investigation by magistrates. The British Foreign Secretary Jack Straw has opened a year of events celebrating the 100th anniversary of the Entente Cordiale, an alliance between Britain and France which resulted in the two countries fighting together in both world wars. In a speech in Paris, Mr. Straw said the issues that united Britain and France were far greater than those that divided them. BBC News.
This is Queer Voices.
Good evening, this is Jack Polinsky.
And I'm Joan Devlin.
And J.D. Doyle.
And Glenn Holt.
We've got some birthdays here. Rush Limbaugh today and Howard Stern, you know, two big radio personalities.
Are they going to call in?
I hope no.
We could let Howard Stern call in. We had another big radio personality who had a birthday here.
Who would that be?
You, Jack Polinsky.
Here
today, that's right. He is 21 again, and he is officially legal.
Twice.
And I wanted to make a quick announcement. At 6:30 on Sunday the 18th, there will be a program at the Houston Gay, Lesbian, Bisexual, and Transgendered Community Center at 3400 Montrose. It is in honor of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Day, which is actually Monday, but the program is on Sunday the 18th. It is called Expressions of Freedom. It will include Aaron Coleman, Vincent James, Donna Garrett, KPFT's own Ray Hill. And it sounds like a great program, and best of all, it is free.
Okay, tonight?
Tonight we have an interview right after This Way Out with Greg Shapiro from Windy City Radio in Chicago, and also a journalist and reviewer of queer music carried all over the country.
And after that, we'll have Ernie Mnuchin, who is with Channel 8. He's doing a new program called Interview. And his first program, he's going to have Anne Rice on, who is an incredible writer.
Not too shabby.
Yes.
Absolutely. So we're doing the all-media night tonight, I guess.
Yeah, radio, literature.
Well, let's first go to News Wrap from This Way Out.
I'm Christopher Gall.
And I'm Cindy Friedman.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending January 10th, 2004. Transsexuals won marriage rights throughout the European Union with a ruling this week by the EU's highest court, the European Court of Justice in Brussels. The European Court of Human Rights in Strasbourg had previously upheld transsexuals' right to marry a partner of the gender opposite their own self-identified one. The case before the Court of Justice was that of a British female nurse, known as KB, whose trans man partner, known as R, cannot receive spousal survivor benefits in event of her death because they cannot marry. KB has been contributing to her pension fund throughout her 20 years of work with Britain's National Health Service. The Court of Justice found this situation an inequality of treatment in breach of human rights, such that Britain's marriage law is incompatible with European law. The Court of Justice sent the case itself back to Britain's legal system for further action. Almost all the current European Union countries do legally recognize sex changes and allow marriages accordingly, but a bill to that effect is only now before the British Parliament. The Court of Justice ruling may have its greatest impact on the 10 nations that will become the EU's newest members in May.
Scotland's smallest county, Clackmannanshire, will become its first to officially register gay and lesbian partnerships. The commitment ceremonies were approved by the so-called Wee Counties Council this week, along with civil ceremonies for births, renewals of marriage vows, and attainment of citizenship, effective immediately. Registry carries no legal status, but the British Parliament is currently considering domestic partnerships, which Scotland is expected to adopt as soon as they're enacted. Press reports emphasized criticism from religious leaders of several denominations, but a council spokesperson defended the move, saying that, "As a council, we're particularly keen to ensure we are able to offer the widest possible choice to our service users."
The Israeli parliament, the Knesset, last week gave preliminary approval to explicitly extending government compensation for a spouse's accidental death to domestic partners, regardless of gender. Despite vocal opposition from conservatives, the bill passed its first reading by a 3-2 margin. Marriages in Israel can be performed only by rabbis for couples who qualify under Orthodox Jewish law, and legal recognition of unmarried heterosexual couples is as politically divisive as for same-gender couples. But even some of Israel's Orthodox rabbis may be ready to reconsider their stance on gays and lesbians, as a workshop on homosexuality held at an international rabbinical convention in Jerusalem last week is being hailed as a first. The workshop itself was closeted under the title "Bringing Hearts Closer in a Time of Modern Questions."
The U.S. state of New Jersey is on its way to legal recognition of same-gender partnerships, with state Senate approval of more than 70% this week. The state House had already passed the bill last month, so it now moves to Governor James McGreevy, who's already said he'll sign it into law. Primarily, the bill extends spousal benefits to the registered domestic partners of New Jersey civil servants, including unmarried heterosexual partners over age 62. But registry will also grant other New Jersey couples rights to hospital visitation and medical decision-making, and it requires health insurance carriers to offer them spousal coverage. It carries no parental or property rights, but allows partners to claim each other as dependents in state income tax filings and to qualify for state spousal inheritance tax exemptions. The state Senate debate was surprisingly tame, lasting only 15 minutes as no senator spoke against the measure on the floor. All the opposition votes were cast by Republicans, with almost as many senators abstaining. Meanwhile, a lawsuit for full equal marriage rights is currently pending before New Jersey Appeals Court.
Elsewhere in the U.S. this week, legal cases on civil rights concluded. In California, the Morgan Hill Unified School District agreed to pay a total of more than $1 million to settle a lawsuit brought by six gays and lesbians who'd experienced harassment and discrimination as middle school and high school students in the 1990s. Their five-year-old lawsuit claimed that administrators and teachers had failed to intervene when they were abused by other students. The school district, which did not admit any wrongdoing, also agreed to strengthen its policies and to train all of its staff and its middle school students towards elimination of anti-gay harassment and discrimination. The students were represented by the American Civil Liberties Union, the National Center for Lesbian Rights, and a private San Francisco law firm. The school district was spurred to settle by a ruling last year by the 9th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals that public school administrators' failure to effectively counter homophobic harassment constitutes a violation of the right to equal protection guaranteed by the U.S. Constitution.
Another California legal settlement of about $1 million was reached this week as the city of San Diego cut its ties with the Boy Scouts of America because of the Scouts' policy of discrimination against gays and atheists. The American Civil Liberties Union had filed the lawsuit more than 3 years ago on behalf of two boys who feel they cannot join the Scouts, one because his parents are a lesbian couple and the other because his parents are agnostic. The Scouts had enjoyed long-term leases in two San Diego parks for only a token fee. A federal court ruled in July that that was a violation of separation of church and state, and the city will now end its preferential treatment of the Scouts. The city's payment is to defray the plaintiff's court costs and attorney's fees. But while the San Diego City Council has agreed to go along with the ACLU, the Scouts are determined to hang on to the land and have sought help from the U.S. Department of Justice. They also plan to appeal the federal court's ruling as soon as the case is officially completed.
That appeal would be heard by the 9th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals, and a ruling it issued bodes ill for the Scouts. This week, that panel rejected a claim of religious discrimination by a former employee at an Idaho office of electronics giant Hewlett-Packard. In 2000, the company began an internal campaign to implement its diversity policy, displaying assorted posters with the slogan, "Diversity is our strength." One of those, featuring gay employees, was posted near the desk of Richard Peterson, who responded by posting in his workspace biblical quotations against homosexuality that could be read by passersby. His supervisor believed this to violate company policy against harassment and took the quotes down, but Peterson said he'd remove them only if the company removed its gay tolerance posters. Ultimately, he was fired for insubordination, but filed his lawsuit in the belief he'd been unfairly singled out. A three-judge panel of the appeals court upheld a federal trial judge's finding that Hewlett-Packard had the right to enforce its anti-discrimination policy, even at the expense of Peterson's freedom of expression, and that his message differed from others in the workplace because it attempted to generate a hostile and intolerant work environment. Peterson plans to appeal to the U.S. Supreme Court.
There were mixed messages on civil rights this week for gays and lesbians in Singapore. Last year, the prime minister created a stir by revealing they'd be allowed to serve in government jobs despite the nation's sodomy laws. Currently, the government is reviewing the penal code towards a major overhaul, and this week its minister for law told the parliament that decriminalization of oral sex is under consideration. However, it's widely believed that it's only oral sex between a male and a female that would become legal. On the other hand, the deputy prime minister indicated in a speech this week that the government's plans to increase political and social freedom are likely to include an end to the current ban on official registration of gay and lesbian organizations. DPM Lee Hsien Loong largely blamed the nation's slow movement on gay and lesbian issues on Muslim opposition. Despite the ban on official registry, though, Singapore's first counseling service for gays and lesbians, the Pelangi Pride Center, opened last month.
And finally, one current internet poll is now showing strong support for equal marriage rights for U.S. gays and lesbians. Some 470,000 respondents affirmed, "I favor legalization of homosexual marriage," with another more than 62,000 choosing, "I favor a civil union with the full benefits of marriage except for the name," for total support of more than 67%. Thanks to gay and lesbian email lists, this is rather more support for legal recognition of same-gender couples than most professional surveys are currently finding in the U.S. But what's really surprising is the web host of this poll. It's the virulently anti-gay American Family Association. The online poll is part of the AFA's so-called Help Save Marriage campaign, and the group is on record with its promise to pass the results on to Congress members.
That's News Wrap for the week ending January 10th, 2004. Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Cindy Friedman and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. For This Way Out, I'm Christopher Gall.
And I'm Cindy Friedman.
This is Queer Voices.
just in case you didn't hear it on top of the show, we're only going to be an hour this evening because at 9 p.m. Houston time, they're going to be doing, and if you haven't heard it on other days, they're doing election coverage for the people who are running for the board, the local advisory board here at KPFT in Houston, which will eventually be electing people to run the national board. And this is probably the first time in history that a media group of this size, of any size, has elected people from the community to actually make decisions on policies of the media. And, of course, Clear Channel doesn't do anything like that, but Pacifica Radio does.
In the studio tonight, we have with us Greg Shapiro, who is co-host and music director of Windy City Radio in Chicago, and he also is a journalist who writes reviews of GLBT music for about a dozen publications. Welcome, Greg.
I'm glad to be here. Thanks for having me, JD.
How many publications are you carrying?
Give or take one or two, but it's about a dozen total.
Including Outsmart in Houston.
Outsmart in Houston, yeah. Absolutely.
Am I begging the question, what brings you to Houston?
I'm trying to escape from the cold in Chicago. So I'm stopping here. I've got some family here who I'm grateful for putting me up for a couple days. And I'm meeting with some of my editors along. I'm taking a road trip to California and meeting with my editors along the way. So this was one of the stops along the way.
Greg is one of my cohorts, so we've been gabbing for about 3 hours, so I hope we haven't run out.
Yeah, I think it's so exciting to meet somebody who's as thrilled by this music as I am. It really is.
Okay, one of the things I didn't want to ask you before was when you get a CD to review and you just don't like it, what's your philosophy on how to handle that?
Well, you know, it's one of those situations that I get a lot, especially when specifically for queer music, a lot of it is really small independent artists. They're making them at home or on a very small budget. And my feeling is that if it's not sort of up to par, it's easier for me just not to write about it at all than to write something negative. I have no qualms about writing negative things about Madonna Louise Veronica Ciccone and her ilk. But, because she can take it. She's thick-skinned. Mm-hmm. She's got no problem with that.
There was a review in a recent Outsmart a couple months ago on Ari Gold's new CD, and the reviewer just ripped it and was very mean-spirited, and I almost called them because I couldn't see any point to that.
Right, there's no point, and the thing is when there's something that's indie that needs to be heard, the whole point is getting the word out about the indie artists, whether it's in print, whether it's on radio. So if it's not worth writing about, don't write about it. But if it's good, you got to make people aware of it, and I find any way possible. Again, radio, magazines, newspapers. That's my job to do that.
But you wrote about the latest Alex Olson.
I did write about the latest Alex Olson, and I think I found something nice to say in the review. It's not here in front of me, so I can't really defend it. I don't necessarily want to pick on Alex herself.
For people who don't know the name,
Alex Olson's the spoken word artist.
Right, and her first CD was, I think, stellar. Very cutting edge.
I think, what did I say? We already have an Ani DeFranco. Thank you. Thanks
yes.
for coming.
Yes, that's yeah. been there, done that.
For me, it's, there. You know, the Indigo Girls are a great example of a queer group that have a lot of imitators. And the thing is, innovate, don't imitate. And that's sort of the philosophy that I take. So with Alex, I feel like not enough innovation. Oh, I'm saying this and she's going to come beat me up. But
she could do it too.
She could. I mean, I've even seen her perform live. And I don't know. I think with that kind of spoken word stuff, I have lots of issues with that. So, and I don't think we've got the time to go into that. But does that answer your question?
Well, kind of, yeah. Have you found that some of your reviews work better in different parts of the country than others?
I think that it's sort of, I try to keep it you know, I have the sort of this Midwestern voice, I think, when I speak and when I write. There's sort of a Midwestern quality to it. So that's kind of that friendly, you know, let's go milk a cow kind of thing. And so,
so you don't tailor it to the publication, really?
I don't. I mean, a publication I write for in New York, I might do a few more sort of like dance-related reviews. But for my general column that goes out to the other publications, I do these themed columns. Like, so for example, the column that's in the current issue of Outsmart is about the multiple releases by queer artists. I mean, throughout the year, I was writing these sort of massive CD review columns because there were so much material released just in 2003 alone. I mean, I'm estimating well over 100 CDs by queer artists.
Do you feel like you're doing injustice now? Because, like, you covered a lot of artists in your last column.
Well, when something really like sets me off, I could talk about it for hours. So I try to, you know, limit the, you know, a paragraph for each thing. And if something doesn't necessarily excite me, but might excite somebody else, I still feel like it's my job to at least give it a plug, give it a mention, because I know there's somebody out there who's going to like something.
And you paused during your interview to kind of laud Deirdre McCalla.
Oh yes, Deirdre.
So that made you stop and throw some praise
in
the air.
Right, truly a legend, and I just wish more people knew about some of these. I mean, she's somebody that, you know, I think has a decent sized following, but there are so many more people who could know about her. Young people could benefit from hearing her. I feel like I'm like 100 years old. The young people would really benefit.
She'll be one of my interviews on Queer Music Heritage in 2 weeks.
She's
so delighted
really
to
interview terrific,
her.
Really terrific, and exciting history. I mean, she's part of the heritage.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that begs the next question. As you're going through and doing this, have you ever had, you know, been surprised? You know, you were joking around about you're going to get beat up, but I mean, have you ever, and I see this with JD, you know, the appreciation, you know, kind of from the artists, I mean, the way they feel about it.
Absolutely. Whether it's, you know, if I do an interview and JD and I are talking about this a little before, and then the person makes a comment during the interview, like, you know, you got it right. They're like, you're asking the best. Like, I just interviewed this guy, Steven Lutvak, who's a New York singer-songwriter guy. And before he'd answer every question, he would say, Greg, that's a really good question. And, you know, it's kind of a crapshoot. It's stuff that I want to know, I think the people want to know, so I ask the stuff that speaks to me. So when you get that kind of interaction, like in an interview, or then there's a guy who's in this, again, an Outsmart, Lamont Rigel, who's a singer-songwriter in San Francisco, who, part of my job, I feel, after a review runs, I let everybody know. If it's the artist, the record label, the PR firm, you sent it to me, I want you to see proof that I wrote about it, so I contact everybody as soon as something runs, and I'll get a thank you here and there from the PR, from the record label, but the artists take the time to say, dude, thank you for the review. You really, I mean, and this review, this particular column.
They're hungry for exposure.
I know.
They're not played on commercial radio.
Right. And it's a pleasure to see that they're, you know, that they like the reviews.
They're not in People magazine.
Right, and you actually listen to their work, which was a whole other topic we got off on.
Again, that's so much my job.
I know, but, you know, a lot of people don't. I mean, they read the liner notes
It says here, this is a good folk album.
Yeah.
No, but it might not be a good folk album. Here's the thing. My name is attached to it, to the review. So if I'm going to say it's good, it has to be good. I have to think it's good. And, you know, I would say, I listen to everything at least once straight through, and then I'll go back and I'll pick out things that really stick out for me. And that's, I think, if you read one of my reviews, you'll see, you know, there's certain songs I'll mention that stand out. But yeah, it's too important. My name, my reputation is too important to just guess on something.
Mm-hmm.
Have you done any reviews that later you say, God, was I wrong about that?
God, that would mean I'd have to admit I was wrong about something. Do you have another question?
Yeah.
We have time.
Not very often. I have to feel.
Maybe your
I'm
appreciation
to
grew
the,
afterwards.
Oh, if a song, a CD that I gave a bad review to that.
Or a neutral.
Oh.
I was frankly lukewarm about Jay Spears' CD, and it grew and grew on me.
And then did you also get a chance to see him live, too?
Yeah.
that's the thing, is that sometimes it's hard.
Well, that always amplifies it.
Oh,
and sometimes it's hard to separate seeing them live from hearing them, because you tend to put more into the disc than might really be there.
Right. I wish that I had more time for things to grow on me, but I don't. So
me too.
I've got to listen to it, and I have to love it or like it or lump it, you know, send it packing.
Any favorite interviews? No, you do music interviews, you do author interviews, you do some television, film?
Film and theater.
How about a music one?
A music one. There are people, I'm really lucky I've been able to interview several artists more than once. Cyndi Lauper is always a joy. Melissa Etheridge is becoming more of a joy. This is why I just interviewed her for the third time for her new CD. And
now, are these phone interviews or live?
Those two are phone, but oftentimes stuff is live. Are you talking about queer artists, or are you talking about... Like, I just recently interviewed Craig Lucas, the writer... he's a screenwriter, and he wrote the play Prelude to a Kiss. He wrote the screenplay for Longtime Companion, and he was in Chicago. They're preparing rehearsals for his new musical, and I got to sit down across the table from Craig Lucas and talk to him, and that's one of my more memorable recent ones. It was really exciting. But then I interviewed Mandy Moore in person a few weeks ago. So I said,
okay, that's just not going to impress.
It's a gamut.
Yeah.
I mean, it's everything.
How about a TV
But
or
now
movie
the guy
person?
That she co-stars with in her new movie.
Oh, I've seen the clips.
Matthew Good. Oh, too good to be true. He looks like a young Rupert Everett. He's absolutely beautiful, and he's the sweetest guy. He was there also in person for the interview.
He's English?
He's English, mm-hmm. and he's dreamy and real cool. I mean, there's a scene, and it's a sort of a mediocre movie, but there's a scene in the movie where Mandy Moore's character is in a hug with this other guy that they meet on this trip in Europe, and the other guy sort of summons the Matthew Good character over, and he says something to him about... It's going to be a group hug, but he says, there's a chicky buffer here, because he's British. And I'd never heard the term chicky buffer before. And it turns out that the screenwriters made up the term. But I asked this guy, Matthew, the actor, if he had ever heard, as a straight man, have you ever heard the term chicky buffer? Meaning that if there's a woman involved in a hug between two men and a woman, the woman, it reduces
the safety zone.
Homoerotic tension. Oh my God, there might be homoerotic tension. And he said he'd never heard it before. And he's like, I have no trouble hugging a mate. So, no. I
mean, yeah, but that's, you know, Europe and England. That's different
right,
than America.
Absolutely, absolutely. And it was two American guys who wrote the screenplay, so. And did that answer the question?
I feel like
okay.
Any really terrible interviews?
Oh, God, yes. Two. I won't name either artist, but one was a transatlantic call with a famous male British rocker who had just released an album of one of the two, just had, and please don't try to make any guesses.
I was thinking.
Symphonic music. And so during the course of the interview, I mentioned that at the same time that this CD was coming out, Paul McCartney was also releasing a CD of symphonic music. And isn't it interesting that all of these male rockers are now releasing symphonic CDs? And his response was, I can't believe you mentioned that hack in an interview with me. You know, you do the old hit your head.
The hack, Paul McCartney?
Paul McCartney's a hack. How did
I
not know him?
Yeah, I was going to say.
I'm such a fool. And I basically sort of, like, you know, the little cartoon character sort of running in place really fast and not moving. I was, like, scrambling, trying to save the interview. And I did. I said, I'm sorry. Let's move on to the next subject. And then the other sort of disaster was a multifaceted lesbian performer. She's worked in many genres, and she had just released her first CD. And an editor of mine, I guess for some reason, didn't trust me and provided me with a question that he wanted asked, which was... Really, as far as I'm concerned, no, I can handle it on my end, thanks. And I asked the question, and a question related to another performer. And when I asked this question of this woman, she's like, Oh, no. No, 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 no. I cannot believe you just asked that question in an interview. This interview is about me. It's about me, 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 me.
Oh, no.
Well, thank you for clarifying.
Thank you, Leah.
Ouch.
Wow.
I'm speechless. So I scrambled and I said, you know, we'll just move to the next question. And she said, I'd preface the question by saying, this is not my question.
Uh-huh.
This is a question that my editor at this paper in this city wants me to ask you. So I had given her fair warning. And she says, oh no, you have that editor, you have him call me. Click. And I'm like, oh my God, I cried. And then I called the PR firm and they said, oh yeah, we've been waiting for you. I was like, whoa, dude, what did I do? I mean, we had had this great, up until that point, the first six
good
or seven
rapport,
questions
yeah.
were great. We're laughing. I'm calling her names. She's calling me names. We're clowning around. And I get to this, and so we kind of hashed it out, and then she called me back, and she apologized, and we picked up, and we eliminated that question altogether.
Oh, so you finished the interview.
I did finish the interview.
Really?
So both have been saved. Those two are both saved.
As you've been going along and meeting people, you know, varying degrees of fame and things, has it gotten easier? Do you still kind of get
my
nervous?
Heart. No. My poor old heart just boom, boom. I mean, it's like, you know.
You get kind of stage fright.
It's like house music is playing in my chest.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But, the fact that, you know, you're a GLBT person, GLBT associated, that doesn't seem to be a barrier, does it?
No, not at all. In fact, they want to talk to me. I'll give you an example. The Mandy Moore thing is just one small example. Actually, they know that's not going to work. There's another one. I'm trying to think of what it was. Again, it was a movie interview where they were going to force me to sit in a round table.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, no, I'm not going to sit on a rock. Oh, I know what it was. It was Gina Gershon.
Uh-huh.
It was Gina Gershon for the movie Pray for Rock and Roll, where she plays the lesbian
right.
rocker. And they were going to put me in a round table. And I said, okay, no, I'm not going to sit in a room full of, you know, love 'em or leave 'em straight men panting over Gina Gershon. I write for the gay press. I write for a number of gay and lesbian publications. I want to have a one-on-one interview with Gina Gershon. And I got a one-on-one interview with Gina Gershon. So, I think I lost. Did I get, am I close to the question?
Well, yeah, I guess that, you know, the fact that you don't feel like you have to hide who you are to get these, you know, top name kind of
no.
people.
I mean, I do
that's
write,
changed, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I do write for one mainstream publication, just so I can have a little more exposure.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but they don't seem to care either.
No, though. Not at all. And in fact, I mean, I think I bring a gay sensibility to the stuff I do for them anyway.
Uh-huh.
It's not detachable. It's not.
Yeah.
No, it's there.
How long have you been writing the reviews?
10 years, about 10 years.
Has your approach changed?
It's funny, you were talking about doing interviews, and you're talking about the lengths of the interviews you've done. The one thing that has really changed is I keep an eye on the clock, and what's turned out is that the interview subjects appreciate it. I say, I need less than 15 minutes. Sometimes it's 15 minutes, sometimes it's 16 minutes. But the idea of transcribing anything longer than 16 minutes is really not it's not a pleasant prospect. So I really try to keep it, I keep it going, I keep
yeah.
it fast, I keep it short.
But if I'm talking to, for history purposes, I'm talking to Alex Dobkin, we go 45 minutes, I'm thrilled.
It was a decision that I had to make that I just can't do that. And because these people are really on the phone, a lot of these
yes.
artists promoting CDs, they're on the phone calling people all day, or they're showing, or they're
mm-hmm.
sitting through these
and
in-person interviews.
And this is
interviews.
Your business.
Right. So I need to, like, get it in, get it out, and bring it home. God, that sounded really obscene. I'm sorry, go
it's
ahead.
It's a production line.
Yeah.
Next.
Right. Yeah. So.
So how many CDs have you reviewed?
Wow. I know that my CD collection at this point is over 10,000 CDs. But, I mean, you know, there's CDs that I've bought and CDs that I've, you know. So, reviewed, maybe, I couldn't even guess. Thousands.
So, before 10 years ago, could you ever have envisioned yourself doing this kind of thing?
This is such it's such a dream come true. I mean, my degree, I have a BFA from in creative writing from Emerson College in Boston. So I have this whole life as a creative writer. I'm a published poet and fiction writer. Mm-hmm. I've got stuff in anthologies and textbooks.
Mm-hmm. You're professional queer now.
Exactly. Yes. Literary journals. Mm-hmm. So I was doing that for a long time after I graduated, well, for 10 years after graduating college. And then I would work, like, oh, God, I'd work 9-to-5 jobs. I'd work in banks and offices. Because for me, I was an artist, and I needed, like, a job to supplement my art. And then when I found out that you get paid for being a journalist, I sort of stopped that. I'm an artiste. I can't be a journalist. To, dude, I'm a journalist and I'm making money and
yeah.
and I'm syndicated and my name's out there. So
my thing is, anytime you can make a living doing the fun stuff, right. you're good to go.
And it's exhausting, and I work at least a 60-hour week.
Yeah, but if you love it, it makes a difference.
I do.
Any question I should have asked you?
No, I think you did an excellent job.
Yeah, our editor didn't give him any, so.
Oh, okay.
No, this has been fun.
We want to thank Greg Shapiro for stopping by today, and we want to get to one song I want to plug, because one of my artist friends named Ellis is going to be appearing in Houston on the 21st at the Rhythm Room. That's 815 Washington. That's a week after next on a Wednesday, and I wanted to give you advance notice on that. Here's a song from one of her albums called Everything That's Real.
KPFT elections are underway. Candidates speak their piece every half hour. Here is one of the 62 candidates running for the KPFT local station board.
Fellow KPFT listeners, my name is Paul Scott, and I'm asking for your vote in the coming LSB election. In February of 2004, 18 listeners and 6 staff members will receive the baton of responsibility that is the guidance of our station. As a new member, I bring humor, an open mind, a wide range of experience, plus a desire to serve to the board. That is why a vote for Paul Scott in January will be a vote that builds on our established foundations and opens up the way for more new ideas. Thank you for your trust. I'm Paul Scott.
To find out more about KPFT elections, visit the KPFT website at kpft.org.
This is Queer Voices.
Well, it's sort of media night here tonight. I guess it's the media interviewing the media.
You don't get to do that very often, though.
No, unless, of course, it's Ray Hill, but that's a whole other story. Ernie Munoz is with us tonight, and he is with Channel 8, the KUHT, the PBS station here in Houston, and he's got a new show. Why don't you tell us a little bit about it?
Well, what do you want to know? It's called Interviews. There's Thursday nights at 10 o'clock. It's going to premiere this coming Thursday night. At 10 o'clock, appropriately enough. And it's a half an hour one-on-one interview series in which we try and bring you as close to a real conversation with whomever our guests are as possible on television.
And I guess Channel 8's sort of been playing around with their local programming a little bit over the past couple of years, and this is what they've sort of settled with?
No, it's kind of funny. We had done a few years, of course, you know, we used to do a daily show called Weeknight Edition or Weekday, depending on which time you came into it. And 2 years, year and a half ago, it ended up being taken off the air with budget cuts. There were layoffs, and we had to save some money. And I was kept on, along with most of the crew from our show, to create a primetime magazine. And so that was the connection, and that launched a little over a year ago, October the year before. And while we were getting ready to do that, we had done our interview with Stella Bird, the mother of James Byrd Jr., and it was a half an hour one-on-one interview. And we had enjoyed the experience of doing it and got such positive feedback, we wanted to do more of that. But as we developed the new show, it was more of a local magazine program about people specifically in Houston. So it took away our ability to do those long-form interviews. We'd done a lot of those back on Weekday. And also took away our ability to do national guests, because it's really a local magazine. Because I guess the trend that we were feeling with PBS is that the way for PBS to survive on a local level is to focus on local issues.
Right.
Which the other markets can't, or the other stations can't really do that well. So we did that, and we've been doing it, and we're still doing it. The Connection, Tuesdays 9 o'clock, Sundays repeat at 5 o'clock, and we're still on doing that. And in the process, we got up, we got going, we got used to doing it, and now we thought, we have time to try something else, too. And so we resurrected the half-hour one-on-one interview format, and that's going to be the substance of Interviews.
So do you get a big travel budget to do this?
Not a penny.
Sort of like us, huh?
Yeah. We do it. But the clever thing about the show is that we're just watching for who comes to town. Mm-hmm. And we snag them when they're in town, and they might sit a little while in the can for us. But, I mean, I shouldn't admit this, but we premiere on Thursday night, but we already have 10 episodes done. So we're done through the end of March already in taping. So that helps us to make sure that we don't have to take just anyone. We can make sure that each person that comes on the show has a story, and that's pretty much the criteria. You have to be of some sort of national prominence, and the story that you have to tell can sustain a half an hour one-on-one interview.
So do you do the research on this and the writing? And in other words, the questions like Larry King aren't just handed
They're
to you.
They're your questions.
Yeah, and the other thing is that I don't come with prepared questions. I keep getting asked about that all through this little process of launching the show, and people keep saying, well, I don't see you with notes, and I don't see you. And my whole theory is you study about the person beforehand, and then I leave it all out of the way. And I come in, I sit down, I just have a conversation. And I figure that when you have a conversation with someone, be it at a cocktail party or a friend of yours on the phone, you don't prepare questions ahead of time. You know, if somebody calls you or somebody walks up to you somewhere and says, hi, I'm so-and-so, you have a way to carry on a conversation with them. And hopefully we're carrying that through to this show. Another thing is, in this show, there won't be B-roll, as we call it. There won't be clips. If Anne Rice is talking about her new book, we're not going to cut to a shot of the cover of the book. Or if she talks about the movie Interview with the Vampire, we're not going to show you a scene. And the logic behind that was, in conversation, if I want to tell you about something when I'm talking to you, I don't pull out B-roll or secondary material.
They do it on the actor studio.
Yeah, well, that's the actor studio. We're different. And so we're waiting for the stories to be told by the expression in their face from what they have to say. So it's very much vocally driven.
Have the actors been okay with that? Because I know sometimes, not even actors, I guess the guests, because sometimes they get a little disconcerted if there's no prepared questions, like they think you're going to maybe put them on the spot or ask them something they don't really want to talk about.
Yeah, we haven't run into that yet. And actually, in all the years that I've done this, which is roughly 20 years I've been interviewing people, the only time I've ever been asked, the only time I was asked questions ahead of time was Yoko Ono years ago. And the only thing, Patti LuPone for this series, they asked ahead of time to see videotapes of me at work. So I had to send 2 half-hour shows that we had done from the old series and send them to her for her approval before she would agree to do this, because she doesn't do many interviews. So
anybody say, don't ask me about this?
No. Amazingly enough, no one has. Of course, I don't think we've hit anyone really who's got a great skeleton in their closet yet. I mean, they've got great stories, but I don't think we've hit somebody. Or
well,
if we do, I don't know what they are.
Questions for you.
All right, what are they? Bring them on.
Well, that's great. It's real nice to see Channel 8 doing local programming. And, you know, Channel 8 has been somewhat criticized in some of the decisions they made and what programs to play, mm-hmm. the national programs. And it's nice to see, and it's difficult because in a city this size, Channel 8's the only game in town for public broadcasting.
Right.
Whereas in Dallas, there's two stations, and in many of the larger cities, there's at least two stations. But you get to pretty much choose your own guest?
Mm-hmm. We've had no interference whatsoever. And Mike McDaniels was asking me about that, the writer for the Chronicle. He was like, come on, they must, like, tell you what to do. And in thinking about, you know, you give a snap answer in an interview, and then afterwards I thought about it a lot. And it wasn't so much, I don't think that they're just saying, we don't care, go book whatever you want, we're busy doing other things. I think over the years that we've been there, because pretty much it's the same team that's brought you the other programs, we've gotten, we've earned their respect, I guess, at the station. We've done quality work that they can be proud of. And so I don't think they feel the need to have to interfere and see what we're doing. I'm sure if I booked somebody that was totally inappropriate, I would hear about it. But really, no one has said anything. No one has given me many guidelines on this. It's Ernie, do what you do. And so we're out there. And if I can tell you a couple of the people that are going to be on.
Well, sure. Please do it. It's like a stellar lineup.
Yeah, we're going to launch with Anne Rice, the author, then Ben Vereen on January 22nd. Nellie Connolly, the governor's wife, is going to be on the 29th, and her claim to fame, as horrible as it is to say, was the last person to speak to John F. Kennedy.
Yeah.
She was in the car when he was assassinated. Then Louis Messina, which a lot of people are like, why are you doing Louis Messina? He's not national prominence. And for those of you who don't know who he is, Louis Messina started off with started off with Pace Concerts, mm-hmm. and then that became SFX, and eventually merged with Clear Channel, and pretty much created the arena stadium shows that are out there touring today. And he signed a non-compete clause and had to go away for a while, and now that non-compete clause with Clear Channel has expired, and he's free now to do concerts again. And in his time away, he's realized all the things they've done wrong. The too high ticket prices, the massive audiences where there's the lack of interpersonal relations between the artist and their audience anymore. And he's working to change that. Of course, his first show in town was Shania Twain. So he's still doing the big monster shows. He's going to be doing the Super Bowl Super Bash downtown for a week. So he's a very interesting story about how come those ticket prices are so high and how do you get the best seats in the house? And that's all going to come in February with Molly Ivins and Patti LuPone and Bruce Wilkinson, who wrote Prayer of Jabez, the, I don't know, 126-week bestseller yeah. from the New York Times. And Frankie Avalon, Vicki Lawrence, and Jim Brickman. Those are the 10 we have done so far.
Well, did it feel pretty good after you sent those tapes to Patti LuPone to have her come back and say she'd do the show?
It did. There was something funny there. Her agent, I recognized his name, and he recognized my name. And for all the negotiating we did, we could never remember how we knew each other. And it's pop, very easily somebody we interviewed a long time ago, and he was representing them. But having been in this for so long, you lose track.
You were going through your black book.
Yeah, checking, where is that guy? No, they were wonderful. And after all of that initial questioning, I thought, oh, Lord, this is going to be a difficult one. And then she came and sat down, and she was, I hate to say it, you should never have favorites, you know, a parent can't pick their favorite child, but Patti LuPone really stands out as one of my favorite shows, and that's coming up February 19th. But she, that woman knows how to tell a story, and it just is all right there, and it's wonderful, everything from Evita to Sunset Boulevard, and she talks about Andrew Lloyd Webber, and all that fun stuff, yeah.
Yeah, so you sound like you've hit it off with all of your guests. Was there any kind of, I mean, they're a very diverse group. Mm-hmm. Was there any kind of rhyme or reason to how you kind of spaced them out, or you just...
We did try and vary them as we've put them into the programming mm-hmm. schedule, and that'll probably change as we move along because we have a commitment to do 26 episodes the first season. So we've got to do still 16 more, and as we start pulling them in, of course, rodeo's coming to town, so we'll get a lot of country artists, and so we'll have to pace them out throughout the run of the show. And the other idea is that the show is of a national scope, and so the station hopefully will be marketing it nationally, so we'll be doing a national show out of our local station with this show.
Certainly Channel 8 has fabulous facilities.
We're pretty proud of them.
Yes, they are just. It's what, 2 years now they've been open, the new facilities?
I think so. It might even be three, actually.
Wow.
You know, it's kind of, time flies, you know.
And Channel 8 doesn't get any money from the University of Houston, correct?
It's an odd setup. We raise our funding for programming through the fund drives. We get government support, but everything goes through the university. If we raise money
corporate funding and all that stuff, we have to go through the university in some ways.
Because the university owns Channel 8.
Right. They hold our license, is how we like to say it. They don't necessarily own us, but they administratively look over us. Now, on some level, I think they, like, pay our phone bill or something like that. Phone bills and some other things. But I'm not exactly sure how that breaks down. I stay in my cube. I stay away from everyone. I just make TV.
Well, there's some fabulous programs like Frontline and the show on Friday nights, which is called Bill Moyers, and also with David Brancaccio, which is a fabulous show also.
Well, Ernie's going to just top them all here coming up.
I hope so. So everyone tune in and watch. And then tell everyone you know to tune in and watch.
So when do you think you'll be going national, or have they set
The idea
for that?
Is, of course, as always, finances. When you're with public radio or public television, you're always worrying about the next dollar. And so it's costing us more and more to send programming out. When we originally had put the plan together, it was a little less expensive than new regulations were put into place. And so now it's going to cost a little more. So we might not send all 26 episodes out. We might choose between them. My belief is that it should go as a series, so program directors at other stations know how to put it in. If you're sending off one-off shows all the time, it'll pop around on schedules all over the place, but it'll never get...
And you won't build an audience that way.
Right. And what we need to do is we need to build the national audience to bring in more of the national guests. So it all works together.
And that's sort of the problem of the show that's on early Monday morning once a quarter or once a month in the life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the fact that it's not on every week, it's hard to program it.
Right. Right. That makes it difficult. And we've often sent out programs. We send out a lot, actually, from our station. But because it's sent out sporadically in pieces here and there, or a half-hour interview of this person or an hour program that way, I think it's hard for outside people to build an understanding of what Houston PBS is doing.
Great. Well, so when is the show on again?
Thursday nights, 10 o'clock, starting this Thursday night with Ann Rice. It's 30 minutes. One-on-one interview, no breaks. But trust me, so far, the first 10 we've done, none of them drag. So I can guarantee you that. And another thing that I hope people will do is, even if it's not someone that they're a huge fan of, because these kind of shows always are the guest-driven programs, but that you'll give it a chance to watch it. Over Christmas, I sat down and watched the first 8 just because my mom was in town. I wanted to show them to her. And my mom made the same comment that other people said as they've seen it, is that even if you don't know who the person is, you can learn something from them. And each one has a great story to tell. So give them a shot, even if you're not familiar with their work or who they are. Watch and see if you can pick something up about it.
Great. Ernie Manous with Channel 8 KUHT here in Houston with a new show called Interview on Thursday evenings at 10 p.m. Houston time. You're listening to Queer Voices, and I think that pretty much wraps up our show this evening, because the next hour we've got a special where we're going to be talking, not us, but the show itself is going to be talking to some of the people running for the local advisory board, which is going to be the governance of this radio station, of this radio network.
Yeah, actually, we have... 2 more minutes.
Okay. Well,
as you were saying,
Ernie, or JD, you want to talk about the next Queer Music Heritage?
Next Queer Music Heritage 2 weeks
from tonight.
Is in 2 weeks, and I have special interviews with Katie Curtis and Deirdre McCalla, who are two of the more renowned of our women singers in the GOPT genre.
Okay, and also...
That wasn't 2 minutes worth.
Well, they got to come back for the interview.
What are your hopes for and dreams for interviews?
And Emmy?
Dominance.
An Emmy?
Oh, Emmy, anyone get an Emmy? I've got an all-you-can-eat trophy from Luther's. Now that's something everyone in this business
And
has.
What color dress will you be wearing to the Emmys when you're nominated?
Probably black. Always tasteful.
Not that swan outfit.
I'd lay an egg in that one, that's for sure.
And if you want to keep up with what's on this show, you can go to our website, queervoices.org, which has pretty much the schedule of what we're doing. And unfortunately, we weren't able to play the second segment from This Way Out, but we'll be playing that in the future because of time considerations tonight. And also next week, our show will also only be an hour. So, and then following up in February, it's Fun Drive.
That's right. Start saving your pennies now.
Absolutely, because it costs money to keep the station on the air, and majority of our money comes from our money that keeps the station on the air. And you're listening to Queer Voices.
You have been listening to Queer Voices, heard each Monday at 8 p.m. here on KPFT, a publicly funded Pacifica Networks station. Queer Voices is produced live in Houston with recorded segments from This Way Out, which is produced at KPFK in Los Angeles. Queer Voices executive producer is Jack Valensky. On-air voices are Joan Devlin, Glenn Holt, and Jack Valensky. You can write to us at P.O. Box 66071, Houston, Texas 77266, or email to lgvnews@aol.com. Be sure to listen to KPFT every Saturday night at midnight for After Hours with Jimmy Carper. It's Queer Radio with Attitude. And don't forget to volunteer for Q Patrol, a nonprofit corporation running citizens' watch patrols in the Montrose to prevent hate crimes. It's fun, safe, and easy to do. Just call 713-528-SAFE. This is the sound of Texas 90.1 FM KPFT in Houston. For Queer Voices, I'm Glenn Holt.
Free and listener sponsored, this is Pacifica Radio, KPFT Houston, 90.1 FM.
KPFT elections are underway. Candidates speak their piece every half hour.
Hi, my name is Joe Sellers, and I would like to be elected to the KPFT LSB. In keeping with the mission statement, I believe that non-mainstream music, community needs, and activities should be presented. National and world news that are not addressed on commercial broadcasting programs should also be covered and discussed. In addition, a community assessment survey should be conducted to learn what the area needs are and how KPFT can help. The listener feedback on our current programming should also be made available to the public. In conclusion, I believe that opinion-based discussion programs should not be placed during work drive time hours. To me, this is almost a commercial approach to present these programs while trapped in your car. We can reach more of the world with music, and hopefully more will listen and support the other great programs. Please vote for Joe Sellers. Thank you.
To find out more about KPFT elections, visit the KPFT website at kpft.org. KPFT elections are underway. Each night at 9 p.m. from now through Monday, January 19th, candidates for the KPFT local station board appear to give their views and answer your questions. This is one of the many ways KPFT is making it possible for you to find out who you want to vote for to help make KPFT the station you want it to be. And now with tonight's candidates, here's KPFT's Ray Hill.
Well, thank you there, Pipes. I appreciate that glorious introduction. A little housekeeping before we get started. Folks have been calling in saying, well, wait a minute, I've been listening to these candidates and my ballots haven't shown up, and how can I keep these people sorted out? Well, there's good news. Number one, there is a voter's guide that will come with your ballot. They're being bulk mailed out of California. The Pacifica Foundation is assisting KPFT to send these things out, and so you will be getting them. Don't worry about not getting them until say mid to late this week. Wednesday or Thursday, you haven't got your ballot, give us a call and we'll check into it. But right now it's a little premature to do it. Some people have already gotten their ballots, but not everybody. My name is Ray Hill. I do the prison show here on radio station KPFT in Houston. And we are doing something very entirely different than has ever been done before. For the first time in the history of broadcasting, a major radio station is going to turn the selection of its local advisory board, the board that advises the staff and management of the station on how to operate this thing, is going to be selected by the listener subscribers. That's never happened before. There are small collectives with pirate radio stations where they do things in even a more democratic process than that. But this is about as democratic as it has ever gotten in real licensed broadcast media. And so the speakers are going to open up tonight with a two-minute opening statement. And then after everybody gets through with their opening statements, we're going to get questions. I mean, you can call them in. And the number you call is 713-526-5738 to ask of these candidates. Even if you ask a specific candidate a specific question, everybody will get an opportunity to answer that. I do not even vote in this particular election. As a matter of fact, I've already voted. The staff at KPFT elects members to the board to represent them, and I'm a volunteer staff and have been for more years than I care to necessarily confess. These folks that are in the studio with me tonight have managed to get this far because, number one, they have bellied up to the bar and said that they are willing to accept a position where they will be required without pay to attend long, boring, often contentious meetings to talk about policy and other issues that relate to their duties and responsibilities. And not only did they do that, but they went and found a whole bunch of other listener supporters of KPFT who signed petitions saying they are deserving of this particular kind of punishment. And so tonight, our candidates are Calvin Blair Jr., Jackie Carpenter, Richard Uzel. Is that correct, Richard? Did I pronounce that all right? Close enough?
Yeah.
And Stephen Burnett. And our opening statement begins with Calvin Blair Jr. Calvin?
Hello, this is Calvin Blair, and I'm one of the wonderful candidates here who's campaigning for a position on the KPFT board. I just like to make note of three different ideas that I was thinking about today, and that is that most nonprofit organizations have some organizational dilemmas, and that is that 10 to 20% of the volunteers do 80 to 90% of the work, and of course, in these organizations, that creates some volunteer burnout. And of course, the simple solution here is simply to create more volunteers. Of course, 10 to 20,000 volunteers look a lot better than 1 to 2,000 volunteers. But in order for this to happen, we must create a greater vision here within the board at KPFT. The old axiom that the definition of insanity of if you do the same things and expect different results, that's the definition of insanity. So we must focus on the kind of station that we want KPFT to grow into, not where it has already been. And this must be a collective effort in doing this. There's another old saying that goes, everything is possible, just not all at the same time. So in going forward, one of the ideas is to create impact statements detailing cost association costs that are associated with new ideas. And from those new ideas and from that impact statement, then we create some goals with some time frames. And from that, we create an action plan. And with these three ideas in mind, I look forward to this meeting tonight and to get to answer some questions, and just look forward to being a part of this this process.
Jackie Carpenter.
Hi. Yeah, my name is Jackie Carpenter, and I decided to run for the board because I was concerned that there weren't going to be enough people running, and I'm delighted to know that we have wonderful candidates, people who are very well qualified. I'm going to give an impromptu opening. A little bit about my background. I am of Lebanese, Scotch-Irish, Cherokee Indian, Greek. I think that's about it. Just a mixture of different things. And I was born in Houston, Texas. Actually, I was born in Crosbyton, Texas, lived in Houston all my life. I attended the High School for the Performing and Visual Arts, a wonderful high school here, and am now teaching there as a harp instructor. And currently work as a harpist in the community as well as teaching English. What I would like to do for the station is, if I'm not elected to the board, is volunteer my time in any way that it's needed, or if I am on the board, to work with other people to educate myself about how a board is run effectively, to be able to get along with other people, to have a good understanding of the budget and what is needed to make the listenership grow. So those are a few of the things that I'm interested in doing. I try to be open-minded, and I think I'm a good listener, and I think those are important qualities that will be needed. So again, my name is Jackie Carpenter, and thank you.
Richard Uzale. I'm board candidate Richard Uzale, and I'd like to ask you for your vote and to say it's time to pump up the volume. It's time for KPFT to be as great as our mission statement envisions. We all have stories of having to explain to people what KPFT is. Well, how many people have to be told who Rush Limbaugh is? If most folks know who that mean-hearted junkie is, then surely they should know the life-affirming, sane alternatives of KPFT and Pacifica. But most folks don't. It's our job to get the word out. When I say it's time to pump up the volume, I mean it's time to get real about stepping up to the full potential of Pacifica's mission statement. Our locally elected board, while providing support and management oversight, must be the catalyst and the example for strengthening, improving, and expanding our programming while increasing our community activism. Our Houston KPFT is a unique and vital part of our larger Pacifica family. We best serve ourselves and our larger family by building on and strengthening our local Houston, Texas uniqueness and by providing leadership both locally and throughout the Pacifica network. First, we must come together to truly build our own team KPFT. We must stop fighting among ourselves. It's time to pull down the wall between our various groups. It's time to lift up all our many gifts and strength. It's time for leadership. I can't expand on this much in 2 minutes, so I ask that you please read my statement and question answers on the KPFT website, and I ask that you please forgive my photograph. Remember, I'm board candidate Richard Uzale, and I deeply appreciate the chance to ask for your vote to help build the Team Pacifica as we step up to the full potential of our KPFT mission statement. It's time to pump up the volume. Please vote for Richard Uzale. Thank you.
Stephen Burnett.
Ray has helped me to ask myself the question, why am I doing this? Well, I'm trying to answer that by first saying that I don't own a TV, so I depend heavily on radio. I've listened to KPFT since its beginning and always listed as one of the few things worthy of holding me so long in this city since I've been here practically all my life. I saw that there were a few people signed up as candidates and thought, I can do this. Pay a little back for all the wealth of knowledge and entertainment that has even helped to make me who I am. So I signed up and will stick with it. But it sounds like a lot of work. First, just learning to work together with a common goal in mind, and then to do the work needed to make this or any radio station operational, something that most listeners are totally take for granted. I'd like to see people like Rick Mitchell, Rick Scardo, Rourke, Larry Winters, Hitachi Aziz, Jacqueline Batiste, Cliff Smith, Ray Hill, and many so others that have worked and used to work in the past that have, even as unknowns, to have seats on this board, but that just isn't going to happen. I'm concerned about how the station could change. Okay, beyond what we listeners hear on our end, there are rumors that things need to change on the inside. Almost everyone has his or her personal opinion. As a concerned listener, I don't want to see a group of people with unrelated interests try to control and not operate KPFT in a harmonious fashion. This transition must take place, be taken seriously. Every listener should be paying attention to who will soon be have a great percentage of control of the future of our station. I just want what is best for this very unique and so valuable asset and responsibility we in Houston have. We are some of the lucky ones.
And there they are, the candidates for the board tonight. We've been doing this for several nights, and I'm going to be doing it at least through Wednesday with other candidates. I hope you will tune in and listen to this. You can ask questions of these candidates by calling 713-526-5738, 713-526-5738. Or if you spell better than you count, you can do that by calling 713-JAM-KPFT. And your questions will be considered, taken pretty much in order. I reserve the right to move them around, combine them with other questions and all of that. The first question will go to Jackie. And Jackie, my question, which I'm initiating, is, what is this job you're seeking? How do you see the role of this board to the programmers, to the management? What do you think this job is that you're seeking?
Oh, gosh. I think I'm going to have to educate myself on how a radio station functions, and that's not something that I'm aware of enough of. I'm not aware enough of this, and I've tried to do some research, but I think we're going to have to do is we're going to have to form committees in areas that we want to see improvements. For example, listener outreach, having grow the listenership. And I think one of the ways that that might be done is taking some of the excellent programs that are great fundraisers like Democracy Now! And trying them in other slots. Maybe, for example, a lot of people have been suggesting the driving time of 7 o'clock in the morning for Democracy Now! So I think that's very important, is building the listenership, having people who don't even know that this radio exists have a chance to tune in, maybe increasing the wattage, finding out what's involved in doing that so that everybody's radio can get that.
Thank you, Jackie. Richard?
Richard Uzel. Board members must be the catalyst and the example for achieving our goals. I think that requires people to be open and flexible and have a great deal of energy. We're creating a new playing field. And the past boards have been merely advisory, and this new board will have more of a role in how the station is run, but exactly what that will look like has yet to be established. I guess early on we're going to need to meet with management and establish just what is expected of us all, the board, the staff, and the management, and we need to better outline how volunteers can plug in and do something that's meaningful to them and their community. Any policies that procedures that that haven't been clear in the past, I think, need to be clarified. I think we need to establish goals and live up to the potential that we have.
Stephen.
Well, I may be idealistic, but the words that come to my mind are teamwork and harmony. If that is possible, and I certainly hope it is because of the valuable asset we have in KPFT, first of all, I think we have to work as a team, or learn to work as a team, and then research and identify any problems and agree upon plans of action. It's going to take an in-depth study as a group and come up with focus on issues. We'll have to solicit ideas from all around, listeners, anywhere we can, but inside the station, within our board, for ideas to not only improve the station, but to make it a strong station. Improvement is one thing, but I'd like to focus, first of all, on having a strong, unified board.
Calvin.
Well, I think a couple of the ideas that I mentioned in my opening statement comes to mind. We have to stop the insanity. If we want to move forward, the first thing we must do is stop looking at what has happened in the past, because we can't do anything about that. We have to create the vision, this board, the direction that we as a group want to take the station in, and we have to keep that in the forefront of everything that we do. Creating impact statements is a great example, an ideal of how to do that. We know
the ideas that come across our desk, if we know what the cost of those ideas are, how they're going to affect our bottom line, because of the board, we become the governing body of the station. I don't think that I necessarily need to be a media expert to sit on the board of this station. But what I do think I need to be able to do is to be a decision maker.
Richard, the next question is, other non-commercial radio stations, NPR stations in this broadcast market, religious radio stations, have corporate underwriting of their individual programs. Pacifica has traditionally resisted that. Do you think that policy should be continued, or should we consider, say, the prison program being brought to you by the Enron Executive Inmate Association and the Kinley Bail Bonding Company?
Well, unfortunately, most of them will avoid having to go to Huntsville. But I think that gets discussed a lot, and I think there are a lot of buzzwords there, and one of the biggest buzzwords is the word corporation. I know that is just a business model. Now, we definitely don't want people like Enron and Coca-Cola sponsoring us. I think that the guide, what I think about when that discussion is going on is our mission statement. And I think if we look at our mission statement, and if it's a group of people that work for the same kind of thing that we're working for, then we might be able to talk to them. But we definitely don't want to be commercial at all.
Stephen?
Well, all the people that work in corporations, well, I say all of them, not all of them, but there are a lot of good people that work in corporations that have good ideals, and they make a lot of the money that's produced by corporations. But in a quick answer, I would say no, because I heard of a famous person saying, I don't remember who it was a bad person, but they said that if you want to catch something or somebody, then feed them. And I would be afraid that we would become dependent on that type of money, and I don't see any reason why listeners can't support this station. I'm not saying that I'm closed-minded to other avenues of fundraising and even gift-giving, but as far as corporate donations go, I would hope we could stay free of that and still remain viable.
Kelvin.
Well, I think that the word corporations is the fear word. It's the fear buzzword. Truth of the matter is that corporations give money for a number of different reasons. And, for example, before the end of the year, I will start my own corporation. And so I would hope that I could contribute for tax purposes or what have you. But I think that the real issue here is if we receive corporate funding, there has to be that line that separates whether or not they're able to determine programming, because I think that's where the fear comes in, is that they're going to determine programming. And as long as that is eliminated and it becomes a gift, and it is understood that that gift does not entitle any type of say in what programming takes place at the station, I think that this may be something that we have to look at on a case-by-case basis.
Jackie?
I kind of share the views of everybody. My gut reaction would be to say no, that we shouldn't, but I would want to look at what circumstances a corporation giving money would expect from us. I'd want to know, are they expecting advertising from it? Are they going to want to hear their name at the end of a show? Would they give it anonymously? I'd like to know what the details would be of that before giving a detailed answer, but I would be, as my other candidates have mentioned, the other candidates have said, I wouldn't want in any way their money dictating programming. So that's my answer.
Here's an interesting question. I'm changing it just a little bit. How did you discover KPFT? And what has been your previous relationship with it? And that goes to Stephen.
Well, I can't remember the first day I heard KPFT. I do remember living in Montrose in the 60s, and living with amongst all my long-haired friends and being very idealistic and looking for some good music on the radio. Now, that wasn't the only thing I was looking for, but it took me a while to learn where to find it. Now, I've listened to KPFD ever since I started on the air, so it must have something that appeals to me and my idealism. I'm sorry, what was the second part of the question?
You pretty much covered it. How did you discover it, and what's been your relationship with it? And that was the question.
Well, like I said earlier, it has made me partly who I am.
Calvin.
Well, believe it or not, the way that I heard about KPFT was from a friend of mine who's a disc jockey for a Clear Channel station. Sorry if that's a plus for Clear Channel. But he happened to love the blues and some of the music that plays on the station over the weekend, and he continued to rave about it. And so knowing that I also enjoy blues and jazz, he was telling me about it, and that's what got me started listening to it. Unfortunately or fortunately, I don't listen to very much radio at all other than KPFT when I'm in the car. That's pretty much the only time I listen, turn the radio on. Other times I'm listening to other stuff that's not coming out of the radio dial.
Jackie.
I have probably been aware of KPFT for a while. I mean, I've probably switched channels back and forth. I used to listen to 88.7 a lot as a college student, turned that on while I was in the car. And I think what happened, although I, you know, listened to that mostly, occasionally I would skim through and find an interesting KPFT show, but I think what really brought me in as a regular listener on a day-to-day basis is Amy Goodman's Democracy Now! I've just been amazed at some of the provocative programming that she's offered, some of the interesting discussions that she's had on the Middle East, her bringing in voices that we never hear on Nightline or 60 Minutes or a number of other places, people like Robert Fisk. So that's really what has gotten me to be a regular listener, and now I've become much more aware of other programs like Flashpoints and local things.
Richard
Uzel, I had the honor to have a couple of friends that were instrumental in starting this with Ray over here, Larry Lee and Don Gardner, and I was able to help construct the first two studios and planted those seeds of the station being special and seeing the potential in it. And then I moved away to Austin and went to school and lived in Austin for a while or a good while. And then since I've moved back this direction, I've been able to participate a little bit with fundraisers and volunteering a little bit. But it's like family.
All right. The next question goes to Calvin. Calvin, we've all managed to struggle into this beat up old building. Do you think we should try to repair it and keep it, or should we consider moving to another location?
All of the above. This is one of those things where we definitely would have to bring someone in who could give us some sound financial data on what those things will cost. We need the numbers. Is it viable to repair, or would it be more feasible to look for another location? Those are not... those are not simple. That's not a simple question to answer without having some other data in front of me to do so.
Jackie?
I would agree that we need to do some research to see what would be the best decision made, but I have to be honest and say I love the location. I love this Montrose area location being right next door to Alliance Française and the charm of this house. I really do like it, and I've had fantasies about actually coming in and painting the walls myself and laying tile in the bathroom, going to Home Depot and buying some things. So I might be if people will let me, doing a project like that in the future. My inclination would want to be to stay here, but I would consider other places if we could do more in a bigger facility and if it would be cheaper. But we get this place for free, I believe. So thank you.
We own it.
Yeah, we own it. So.
Richard, I actually heard a candidate talk about tearing the place down and building something. One of the things that I do is I work on old buildings, and I think the building has a lot of character, and it's a good, solid building. And we've got a lot of room out back, and we could expand out that way. We finally, after 33 years, have a wheelchair ramp, and the building's still not very accessible to folks with disabilities. I think we have room back there. We could build a studio big enough to have concerts in and audiences, and maybe have the board of directors a meeting here on the site. But the place is valuable, and we need to enhance it, but not run away from it.
Stephen?
Well, I haven't thought about it a lot, but of course, free is good, and what works is good. But I do have an idea that KPFT could use an auditorium. I think the backyard idea was a great one, and it's been successful. It would be a great fundraising idea, would be to have concerts that were given by people who maybe cut their teeth on KPFT, that got their start here and that were paying something back. But a little more room would be good. Everything changes, and I don't think we should just resist change. I think we should look for ideas that may improve our space and give us more of an income from that.
Jackie, one caller calls in to remind us that drive time is the most valuable radio time because the greatest potential audience is in their car, as Calvin would have told us earlier. Another caller calls in and says, how would Democracy Now! Be better if put on at 7 a.m. instead of 9 a.m.? And the other question is, what else would you like during drive time?
Okay, well, I can't say that we're going to necessarily pull in more listeners at 7 a.m., but I think we ought to try. I happen to be a person who wakes up late, so it's perfect for me at 9, but I'm aware that so many other people wake up earlier and are on the road at 7 in the morning and are listening to, going through their dial looking for something interesting to listen to. So I do believe that Democracy Now! Would be great. Other news during drive time, I've liked listening to BBC. I don't know if it's as provocative as Democracy Now!, but I've enjoyed that. Flashpoints is interesting, but I'm happy with it at the slot that it's at now. I think some type of news program would be good. Democracy Now! Would be my first choice, though.
Richard.
I definitely think that Democracy Now! Should be moved to from 9 to 7 because I think it would make more of an impact. I think it would get more news out there. I was listening to Flashpoints coming down here to the station a while ago, and it's just amazing the different amount of information and the truth that this station puts out so that folks can see the real goings-on in this world. I think Democracy Now! Deserves to be out there, and we might even consider rebroadcasting it later at night. But I don't know. That's to be decided by our programming staff.
Stephen?
Personally, it doesn't affect me what time it's on, but I could see that it could, Democracy Now! Is what I'm talking about, could benefit a greater number of listeners by being moved. I can't listen to the radio via computer at work because it just takes too much resources from my computer. Now, say, why don't I get a radio? Well, that's a good idea. I definitely need to do that. But I think some thought could be put into the time that certain programs are on, but I really don't have any big gripe with them. But whatever works best for most people would be the best thing to do.
Calvin.
Well, this is one of those reoccurring questions about Democracy Now. I am fortunate enough to listen to Democracy Now as it airs, as well as the BBC when it airs. If at all possible, I attempt to catch both of them because I think they're both very valuable. For the morning drive time, I'm not certain about the evening drive time, but I have another question, and that is, once again, I hate to keep beating a horse here, is I haven't seen the numbers. So apparently somebody else has numbers on why this would be such a great idea that I haven't seen. And so I would like to see that information as to why that would be such a great idea to move that to that time slot.
All right. The next question goes to Stephen. Stephen, this is actually a question of a National Pacifica issue. How do you feel about Pacifica selling off a station frequency, for instance, New York or Los Angeles? For the listeners, those two frequencies are on commercial possible slots, and they're worth a great deal of money. What would you think about Pacifica selling off one of those frequencies to fund an endowment?
When I first heard that question, my answer was no right away. But one of the candidates brought up an issue that station could be moved to the other end of the dial, close to where KPFT is here in Houston. So that might make it a viable money-making deal for KPFT, or not just for KPFT, for Pacifica in general. I'd have to know a little bit more about it. I wouldn't just say, yeah, let's do it just because there's a lot of money involved, but I wouldn't be against it totally either, as long as it wouldn't interrupt the programming that comes out of the stations that it would affect.
I apologize. I started with Stephen on that, but it was Richard's turn, so Richard, you're next.
While I was listening to that, I was thinking about that old song about paving paradise and putting up a parking lot. You know, I think it's a slippery slope. You start liquidizing your assets. Where does it stop? I think it's kind of looking at the horse from the wrong end, and I've looked at these horses from both ends, and some ends are better. I think that if we focus on community outreach and getting more folks involved in the station, the money will come. We don't need to go out and sell our assets. If it's valuable for commercial folks, then it ought to be valuable for us getting our message out. Then we can put our message out in a place that more people will listen to it.
Calvin.
Well, I realize that this is a question that deals with the Pacifica Foundation and the Pacifica family of stations. And in such, it's a part of the family that KPFT is involved in. But I would like to discuss issues that are directly related to KPFT and our station that we're faced with here. We have some issues here of fundraising, financial constraints that are pertinent to the board here that we're going to be faced with on a month-to-month, week-to-week, day-to-day basis. And so those are some concerns that I would really look forward to addressing.
Jackie?
I would have to research it. I'd have to see the pros and cons listed. But I do think there are other ways we could raise money, and that we've had some wonderful fundraising things in the past that have helped us a lot. So, but I'd want to research it more.
Well, we seem to have stirred up an argument between our listeners and callers about what to do with Democracy Now. So I'm going to consider that mind, pretty much worked. However, somebody does ask a question, and I'm changing slightly, and that is moving people around to where there are more listeners. Don't we need to bring in more listeners all of the time? And Stephen, that's to you. How do you do that? How do you increase listening audience overall, not just adapting drive time?
Well, that's certainly an issue that is an important one. There are so many people here in Houston that first, don't even know about KPFT, and second, if they do know about it, have misconceptions about what it's about. Now, there's a lot of people that will not listen to KPFT, no matter how hard you shove the truth at them about how wonderful it is. But there's a lot that can be done. I think we need to reach out in a lot of ways. We need to reach out to children through children's programming, somebody brought up in one of the forums the other day. I think that's a great idea. I think we could work more with printed text to let people know more about KPFT. The point is, yes, we do need to let more people know about KPFT and then see what happens.
Calvin.
Well, how do we get more listeners and create more listener audience, and maybe even more importantly, create more listener sponsors? This is one of those areas that I think the experts would be more inclined to have information on. But from a business standpoint, we have to generate some interest. We have to generate some awareness. We need to create the kind of airwave that's not simply an anti-establishment station, but something that all of the greater Houston population would enjoy to turn in, tune in, and listen to. No anti-establishment campaign has ever lasted, so we need to do. We have to go beyond that and attract new members.
Jackie,
okay, can you repeat the question one more time? I want to be specific. So
the caller says, all right, you're always worried about whether you put Amy in the drive time or whatever. How about increasing the whole listenership at all times? How do we do that?
Okay, so what they're saying is that all of the programs are good, and that why are we so obsessed with getting Amy on? Is that...
listenership is not just a matter of moving programs that we want people to hear to a specific slot, but increasing listeners overall.
Well, I think that would be good, and I think you can do that in a number of different ways. I suggested the Amy Goodman, Democracy Now! Being moved because I'm interested in news, but there are a lot of other things that the station offers. I think that, for example, doing internships, involving young people in the radio station would be a good thing. I know that they do things like that at Houston Media Source, and I know we have HSPVA, the High School for the Performing and Visual Arts, down the street, and I think there's a student, one of my students told me, who's actually volunteering here or is an intern, and I think that's gotten my students interested in wanting to know more about the station. There are all kinds of ways that that we could bring people in. Different fundraisers, bringing in guests to speak, like Daniel Ellsberg.
Richard.
Richard Uzzell. Community outreach is not just a soundbite, it's essential. People are the most valuable asset of our station. Our mission is basically education and community. It's essential that we involve all the rich cultural, ethnic, and racial mix of the Houston area. To turn Kevin Costner's phrase around, if we encourage folks to come, they will build it. And I think fundraising and station growth and even greater outreach will follow. We have to value what listeners think. We have to really pay attention. That's why it's so important for the board to develop actual activities and working committees that puts volunteers to work on something that's valuable to them and their community. And I think we need a full-time paid volunteer coordinator to actually value what the people are wanting to give to the station and to their community.
Calvin, what kind of religious programming would fit into KPFT's purpose and schedule?
Well, you could not have asked a better person that question. Being that I am recovering from religion as a way of life, as a method, what kind of religious program? Well, I'd have to defer that question because I simply would not be the person to answer that question.
All right, Calvin. Jackie, you want to dive
sure.
in there?
Well, I would say that if we're going to be stick by our mission, that any group that wants to come in and have a show should have the ability to do that, whether you're a Baptist or a Catholic or pagan or atheist or Muslim or Hindu. I think it should be open to all groups to if they so choose.
All right. Richard?
Richard Uzzell. I agree with Jackie. I think that that part of our mission statement, the main part of our mission statement is education. And as long as we keep it on the grounds of education and we don't let people proselytize for their particular viewpoint, I think that that very much is, should be on our station, because I think that it's fundamental and very important to people, and it and as I personally believe it should be, but as long as it's educational and not confrontational, I think that would be worthwhile.
Stephen.
Well, I have to agree with all three. I do